Hello and welcome. It's our bonus Q&A episode of Books of the Year here in the studio with top crime author Abir Mukherjee. And you probably heard him on our previous episode. His book is Hunted. You can hear that discussed at great length in the previous episode. So the Q&A, Abir, first question, what is the last book that you really, really enjoyed reading?
That's an easy one because I have finished it about a month ago, and that was The Second Murderer by Denise Mina. I don't know if you've read that, gentlemen.
No.
So this is Denise Mina writing a Philip Marlowe book. So she was tasked by the estate of Raymond Chandler to write a Philip Marlowe book, and it is amazing. She has got the voice of Raymond Chandler down pat. You know, this is a Philip Marlowe novel, but it is fit for the 21st century. So all of these issues around, you know, misogyny and racism and that can taint a few of the later Philip Marlowe novels. She's gone back to an earlier period, to a younger Marlowe, and she's reinterpreted him. And she gives us aspects of that 1930s, because it's set in 1939, she gives us aspects of that 1930s LA that you wouldn't see in the original novels. So she shows us a gay scene, she shows us Hispanic communities, and it's done brilliantly. I mean, she is probably, you know, the greatest living crime writer in the UK because she's so versatile, and this novel is outstanding.
And it's called The Second Murderer.
Yep.
Okay.
Do you have a writing hero, Amir? And have you ever been lucky enough to meet them?
I have several writing heroes. The one that I really wanted to meet that I never did was Philip Kerr.
Okay.
Who wrote the Bernie Gunter novels, because I grew up on them. And, you know, when I came to write my series of books set in India, he was the one, he was the real inspiration. When I read his work, I thought, this is brilliant. You know, this detective upholding a system he doesn't believe in. That very much for me was the spark. I said, well, I can transfer that. I can do that with the issues that I want to talk about and the place I want to talk about. I've had some less glamorous moments as well. I remember meeting John Grisham at the Theakston Awards many years ago. And so I was shortlisted along with Mick Herron. And Mick Herron had, you know, we're waiting to go on stage to shake hands with John Grisham, who's everything you want John Grisham to be. He's got the tan, the sports jacket. He is, you know, in your mind, in your fantasies, John Grisham was just like what he was on stage. And Mick Herron's whispering in my ear, because we have to go on stage, he goes, don't trip, don't trip, don't trip. I'm like, shut up, Herron. And of course, I go up and I trip and I straight into John Grisham's crotch.
Oh, my goodness.
Which, not the finest. It's Mick Herron's fault.
Yeah.
I'm sure that John Grisham remembers it as wonderful
very
as well.
Yeah.
This strikes me as a strange question, but maybe it's a knowing question. What is the worst thing that's happened to you whilst writing? The John Grisham story doesn't count because you finished writing.
Well, I'll tell you, I don't know about the worst thing that's happened to me other than losing half a book with a computer dying. But I'll tell you a different story. I'll tell you what I wanted to do. I wanted, because in the series, the Wyndham and Banerjee series, Sam Wyndham in the early books has an opium addiction. And I thought I should really research smoking opium. And I looked into it and I saw that the only place you can smoke opium in the traditional way now is somewhere on the Cambodia-Laos border. So I said to my wife, you know, in the interest of art, I need to go out to Cambodia/Laos and smoke opium.
Yeah.
And we had a conversation and we decided that I wasn't allowed to do that.
Yes.
So
I'm with your wife, really, on that one, I think.
So I tried to find alternative places in London that might do this. And I think we should gloss over that period because it did not end in any way that would help me do further research.
Right, so that means you did, my interpretation of that is you did find somewhere, you did smoke opium, but that it was a horrendous experience, and you don't want to do it again.
I didn't inhale.
That's a good story. Yeah.
Goodness me. Can you write just about anywhere? We've had certain writers come on here who need to have a routine, yeah, or they need to be in a certain place, and others who can literally do it, you know, on the bus.
Right. There's a funny story in this as well, right? So you see all these, because I remember, you know, going on websites and seeing where writers write, and you see these American writers like David Baldacci or people like Jeffrey Archer, this beautiful study where they write. I've got a wee study, but it's also the boys' playroom. But I'm bigger than them, so I can kick them out most of the time. But I can't actually write in the study. I have to write on my bed. It's the only place that I can really write. Yeah, I can't write. I can edit in the study, which is actually the playroom. But I only really write on the bed. The problem with that is I also tend to fall asleep, right? So my wife will come in and go, "You're asleep." I'm like, "I'm not asleep. I'm just trying to think of a word."
On the bed, are you? Yeah. You don't start under the covers.
No. I'm a professional, right. Man. I'm sitting on top, three pillows behind me, sitting upright. Yeah. Uh-huh. But you know, even then, especially in the afternoons, it's after lunch. You know how tough it is, right? Anyway, sitting on your bed. So I, you know, my wife has come in and gone, "You're asleep." And I'm like, no, I'm thinking of a word. And then she will like play back a video of me snoring, right? So, yeah, that's...
No wonder this book took 4 years.
It's quite tragic, isn't it? But yeah, sitting on a bed is where I like to write. I can't write on... I can edit in many places. I cannot write new
stuff. Coffee shops, libraries?
Nah. Well, libraries I could, yeah. Libraries are good for sprints. You know, when you have to get 5,000 words done over a weekend because, you know, you're already 4 months late. That's when I use libraries because they've got internet, or the library that I used to use had internet, but no phone signal. So you are essentially forced to work. Yeah. So
they also have that sort of latent power, don't they, yeah, of libraries. They sort of take you back to doing your finals, it's just being physically, yeah, being in a library, yeah, makes you think, oh, no, I've got to work right now.
Yeah. And surrounded by other people who are working.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
As I said, you know, I'm naturally lazy. And so, you know, I need some sort of impetus if I'm going to do a lot of work. So, yeah, libraries sometimes. But, you know, my natural habitat is sitting on my bed.
We like to surprise most of our guests with a question from a fellow author and fan. And you've already mentioned it. We have a voice note from fellow crime writer Denise Mina.
Oh, my word.
Hello, Simon and Matt, and hello, Abir. As you know, I'm a massive fan of your writing. What I'd really love to know is, what sort of food do you like to eat when you're having a brilliant writing day?
This feels like a setup now, doesn't it? When I talked about her, I had no idea she'd done this. Food that you eat. I'll tell you what fuels me as I write, and this is a big.
While you're on the bed,
yeah. While I'm on the bed, obviously, you know. But that does narrow down the scope of what you can eat, right? I think for professional purposes, you'll always have a cup of tea there, but you need rich tea, right? You need McVitie's rich tea biscuits to fuel you through the day. And that's become a bit of a sort of issue for me because, you know, I turned 50 recently and my wife said, "You're very fat." So I've cut down, I've started exercising and I've had to cut down on the rich tea biscuits, which I love. And what upsets me is not many people understand the value of rich tea. When you have like a survey of biscuits, people will talk about, you know, chocolate digestives or bourbon. Nobody mentions rich tea as, and I think rich tea is very important to Britain, right? I think British productivity is based on rich tea biscuits. And nobody seems to recognise that.
One of those that doesn't recognise. I mean, they're basically crackers.
Jesus. Matt, we're going to have a fight at this rate. This is what's wrong with Britain after 14 years of Tory rule. This is the problem. Nobody realises the value of a rich tea, decent, hard-working British biscuit.
Yeah, yeah.
Where do you stand on the issue?
Well, I mean, I would... If I'm going to have a biscuit, I would have a chocolate digestive.
You see? Yeah. You're bourgeois. That's
has
the problem.
But it has to be a plain chocolate digestive. I don't want a milk chocolate digestive. But I'm thinking, aren't all biscuits and cakes ultra-processed? So
yes,
I'm trying to be healthy because I'm older than you guys, so I'm further down the line.
Can I tell you my favourite biscuit story? Because I used to be an accountant. I shouldn't say that. You know, it turns people off. But yeah, a Jaffa cake is a cake and not a biscuit. Uh-huh, and you know why that is?
the VAT thing.
Yes, yeah, and that's the best accounting story ever because Jaffa Cakes go hard when they're left out.
They do.
And biscuits go soft.
I do like a Jaffa
and
Cake.
That's how they won the case.
Yeah, I'd prefer
now you're talking about Jaffa Cakes. Yeah, now
see, if you ever want to, if you ever want to impress an accountant, tell them that story on a date, right?
And you can get mini, Jaffa Cakes now, and they're just like, you just shove like 20 in your mouth at the same time.
Funny they don't make mini rich teas.
They're getting smaller.
Yes. Oh, are they?
Yeah, because back in the day, they wouldn't even fit. You'd have to break them to dunk them. And now, oh, Jesus.
Well, who'd have thought it was the biscuits that was going to lead to the passions? So let's talk about your bookshelves. Are they ordered? Are they... We've had every, I think, every different kind of ordering mechanism. We've had geography, we've had alphabetical, we've had colour, we've had everything. Is there any order to yours?
Well, when we lived in central London, we had a lovely minimalist flat. We were quite wanky and we had them by colour. Since we've moved out, the books are just everywhere. I suppose we have a system now where we've run out of bookshelves and they're just vertical, so they're just stacked. It's size. I suppose it's by size is how we do it, right? And it's more a question of what you put where, right? So you put like all your Penguin classics with an eye line of people, right? And the stuff you actually read, you sort of
lower down.
Right? He's, oh, my goodness, how cultured this man is, eating rich tea while reading Proust.
Yeah, but it was a very lockdown conversation, wasn't it? So that on your Zoom, you have to make sure that you've got, you know, very righteous books behind you. Again, it's strange. Do you have any writing quirks, apart from only being able to write on the bed?
What more do you want? Other quirks. I am a stickler for research, right? And the problem is when I do research, I need everybody to realise how clever I am, right? Because if you've researched something, you want... the story about the Jaffa Cakes, you didn't want to hear that, but I know it was anyway, right? So early on in the Wyndham series... I was going to set a scene in the Calcutta sewer system, and so I researched this, as you do, right? And because I spent 2 days researching it and understood all of it, I needed to tell everybody about it. And so I wrote a chapter on the Calcutta sewer system, which my agent cut out, my editor cut every word of it. This is completely irrelevant.
Yes. Yeah.
But I had to, how is everyone going to realise how clever I am if you don't let me put this in?
Robert Harris's advice is... just because it's true, it doesn't mean it's interesting.
Yeah. I think that's very good.
How well do you work with deadlines?
Really badly. As I say, this book should have been out in 2022. I'm very lucky in that I've got really good publishers and really good editors who, you know, realise that I'm basically a hapless diva. I'd be a diva if I could, right? I'm just a charity case instead. And they're very, very good about it. I used to worry about deadlines. I really did. Now, the only times that deadlines matter is when there's a financial implication. Like, if you're not going to get paid, that's when it matters.
Yeah.
If they're like, can you turn these edits round by next month? I'm like, of course. And then 2 months later, I'm still sitting on them. And then I realise the next paycheck's not going to come through and I've got an electricity bill to pay. That's when I'll... Yeah, so money sort of motivates me more than pleading from editors.
That's an accountant speaking.
That is, it is, it's true.
So finally, you're throwing a fantasy dinner party and you can invite three authors, living or dead.
Right.
Who's coming?
Oh, gosh, three authors. Well, we've talked about Philip Kerr. We'd have to have him along, right? Because I understand he was very funny. He was a dry, acerbic man. So I'd love to have him along. There's a writer called Anna Mazzola who writes Gothic fiction. Unfortunately, she writes it really well. I'm intimidated by how well she writes. She's also quite funny. So we'd have her along. The third one, who should we have? I'd have to apologise to John Grisham, but I don't think we'd have him at the dinner party. I'd do that somewhere else, probably over a coffee. I think Mick Herron. Mick Herron's always a good laugh.
Yeah, yeah.
So we had, you know, as you know, I run a podcast as well with Vaseem Khan. And we were doing a live one up in Butte, and we asked Mick to do a rap. And Mick refused to do a rap, but he did do a haiku. So I'd have Mick along because...
That's all blokes, though.
No, Anna. Anna is a
okay.
lady.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, there you go. That's the clue. Anna, girl's name. Yeah.
You weren't listening, were you?
No, Denise, I was thinking Denise Mina is going to come back into the story somewhere, yeah. but no, snubbed.
Yeah. Well, I saw her last night, so, you know, she's had her chance. Yeah.
That's true. Yeah. Okay, so Philip Kerr, Anna Matsola,
yep.
and Meg Herron.
Yeah.
Okay, do you think they get on?
Yes, they really would, because they're all very witty people. Now, I don't know if that's an issue and they sort of compete, but I know Mick is very gracious, so we're actually quite close friends. And I remember when his series came out, I said to him, it's really odd. It's rare for the TV series to be so much better than the books, Mick. And he's like, yes, that's true. So, yeah, I think they'll get on.
Abir, thank you very much indeed. Abir Mukherjee, his book is Hunted, is published by Vintage. It's out now. If you'd like to get in touch with us, you can email us at any time, booksoftheyear@yahoo.com or via the socials. Back next week, when we hope we're going to be joined by the best-selling author, Andrew O'Hagan, who's written Caledonian Road, State of the Nation book, but we hoped he was going to be here a while back and he didn't turn up. So hopefully he will turn up.
Better turn up now, Andrew.
Yeah, absolutely.